Welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast, where we are forging a bold Christian view for America. I'm your host, John Harris. We have a wonderful episode for you just ahead of Christmas. We're going to talk a little bit about the classic film, It's a Wonderful Life, not to get into the details of the film. Many of you have probably watched it. It's one of my holiday favorites, but to examine some of the moral stories and principles we can learn from it. And I wrote an article actually yesterday on my Substack on George Bailey. It was a little bit of a character analysis, also a parallel with some of my own friends and even the way I felt at times. And this has really resonated. It's actually doing quite well. Thousands of people have read it. Hundreds of people are sharing it. And I want to share with you the reason I wrote it. And so we're going to go through that particular Substack piece. We're going to talk about what it means. And I really want to encourage you in this, because if you are especially a man who feels like you've been looked over, maybe you're insignificant, people ignore you, and you're just trying to live, fulfill your responsibilities, do the right thing, you're the one that's actually holding civilization together. You are the unsung heroes. And I think that's what It's a Wonderful Life is about. So we're going to talk about that on the podcast. I do appreciate, though, before we get into it, all your generous support. I don't say this much. I know it's the end of the year, though. And if you want to support me more through prayer, financially, whatever, you can go to the info section in this particular video, and there's some links there. I just appreciate everyone's prayer. Also, there's always things that are busy during the holiday times. And we found out my brother-in-law had an accident last night, which was, it really shook the family up. And I know my wife has been having a hard time. Thank God he's okay. But in the winter, there's a lot of ice and it can be very dangerous. I've had some close calls myself in the past. And so we're just really thankful. We're holding tight to family. We're hosting Christmas this year at my house. So say a prayer for us. I'll say a prayer for you. And that's all I wanted to say at the beginning of this. I hope that you have a wonderful Christmas. And whatever you're doing, whether it's with family or going to church, it's another thing we do on Christmas Eve. I'm going to be leading some Christmas carols at church. I hope that you can put Christ first in all of that. All right. Well, Cosmic Treason says it is happy Christmas Eve Eve. You know, Cosmic, you are probably the most faithful listener to the podcast. I have to say, I think I could start the podcast in the middle of the night and you would somehow be on the channel, or it could be in the middle of Christmas Day. I really appreciate it, brother. Thank you. And happy Christmas Eve Eve to you as well. Well, let's talk about the piece. Let's talk about George Bailey. Let's talk about the significance of the men who stayed, which is the title of this piece. The men who stayed, defeating Pottersville, one wonderful life at a time. You know, It's a Wonderful Life was my grandfather on my mom's side's favorite movie. And in some ways, he actually looked a little bit like George Bailey, kind of long and lanky. He was from Ohio, so had that kind of Midwestern way about him. And so I think of him whenever we watch that film, or in this case, I actually haven't watched it yet this season, but just writing about it, I was thinking of him. And the times he grew up in, he used to get this magazine called Reminisce. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that. Maybe your grandparents get it, but it has a lot of advertisements in it and pop culture references and just interesting facts from decades ago. Now it probably focuses on the 50s and 60s. At the time, my grandfather was subscribed to it. I think it was more like 30s and 40s, sometimes some 50s stuff. And I think when you watch an old movie like It's a Wonderful Life, you get a sense for the way the world used to be. Families used to be a little bit more intact. Maybe that's an understatement, a lot more intact. Communities used to be a lot more supportive of each other. There used to be a higher level of religious adherence. Of course, that's Christianity, right? There used to be, and I could go on and on. But times change. And sometimes when you reminisce, you remember things a little differently than they were. You look through the lens of time with some rose-colored glasses. And I think one of the things about It's a Wonderful Life that I think is so wonderful is, despite the fact that it does present to you some of these things that were commonly strong points at that point in time and that we do not have anymore in our society, it still shows you that humans are humans. Everyone goes through trials. Everyone has hardship, sometimes severe hardship. And the thing that distinguishes us, the thing that makes us who we are, the thing that matures us, the thing that helps us be a blessing to others, is how we handle those things. And I'm reminded, even as I look into the pages of Scripture, which obviously those stories took place a long time before in a very different setting, and how wicked man can be, and then also how God can somehow use flawed people to do very heroic, very mighty, very wonderful things. So that's what we're going to talk about. The men who stayed, the men who did something that honestly took some courage in and of itself. And it's not usually recognized as being a courageous thing, but sticking around your hometown, sticking around the responsibilities that you have to your family, to your church, to the people in your local proximity, because you have a duty to them. Duty is not a word that you hear a lot. Robert E. Lee said it was the sublimest word in the English language. But duty is something that without it, we don't have any basis for any kind of civilization whatsoever. There must be some kind of a shared interest in what we're doing, the neighborliness of simply living near someone and being gracious enough to help them out when they need help, to take them cookies or to share a meal or to offer to watch their kids in a pinch if they need it, whatever the case may be. That's the kind of thing that actually makes life worth living. It's the kind of thing that God placed into our hearts because we're communal beings. He is a communal being. We are communal beings. We actually do need each other. And whatever self-sufficiency and individual ruggedness that we might have, we still actually do need other people to live for and to help encourage us. And the men who stayed are on the front lines of that. They hold the fabric of civilization together. And George Bailey is a great example of that. And when they leave, what you start to see is decadence, immorality, the filthiness. It becomes Pottersville. And many parts of the country are Pottersville. And if you live in a place that's not that, you want to do everything you can to prevent it from becoming that. So the essay starts off. In the classic Christmas film, It's a Wonderful Life, the main character, George Bailey, played by Jimmy Stewart, is the archetype of a Protestant American male from small town USA. He has grand ambitions, but a greater sense of duty to his family and people. He wants to travel the world, but decides on his way out that he must instead fight to maintain his father's building and loan in the wake of his father's unexpected death. Contrary to Ben Shapiro's analysis, in which he casts Bailey as the villain for making irresponsible loans, Bailey actually is the hero because he gives of his own charity and builds something one cannot put a price tag on, a community of love and trust. Still, Bailey struggles throughout the entire film with feeling satisfied with the way his life turned out. He did not choose to stay home in a rather unexciting job while his brother became a war hero and then a business mogul. In reality, George Bailey was going through something many middle-aged men go through, something that has been exacerbated by technology. Midlife blues. Earlier this year, a friend approaching 40 years old confided in me how difficult it was for many in his cohort to watch as guys like me and others had real influence with people while he and others were not listened to at all. They felt invisible, and since then, two other friends around the same age have shared similar sentiments. It seems like the important things in life are happening out there. I can confidently say that the problem my middle-aged friends describe does not go away when you have a little bit of a platform like I do. In fact, I think tasting some of that influence may make it worse. There's always someone with more influence who people listen to more, who simply is invited inside the circles you wish you were included in. I would like to think I'm above the fray. It is true that I do tend to rejoice when others are successful, even if they use the same message I'm using to get there. But I do sometimes struggle when the attractive bad ideas I am trying to oppose get a positive hearing. I wish people would listen to what I am saying instead in those moments and wonder what I am doing wrong that they do not find what I say is compelling. I do not think this must necessarily be envy-driven. Like George Bailey, I tend to blame myself for my own perceived failures. But at the root, there is a frustration driven by a feeling of insignificance. It is the feeling one gets when they think their life should have gone a particular way, but it did not. And the unmet expectations can cause depression, and if left unchecked, jealousy. Many guys thought they would own a home and do not, or would have a wife and three kids, only to run up against singleness, divorce, or fertility issues. The online world makes it worse as the algorithm pushes an endless stream of people enjoying the life you should have had in front of you. Deceitful rites of passage. Men want respect, which usually means being validated in the community of men when they first become a man. This rite of passage, universal to every culture I can think of, has completely broken down in our society. To become a man, one must prove himself. But when does that happen exactly? Is it when a man kills his first deer? Is it when he gets married? Is it when he completes college? In lieu of clear answers to these questions, many young men rack up kills on video games and among friends on social media. Do you remember the first time you ratioed someone? Older people may scoff at the very idea that social media following means much of anything since it lacks any kind of qualifying standard to achieve. But the reality is, this is how many young men find and express approval that convinces them they are making a significant impact. Just the other day, a Zoomer friend of mine told me with pride about a meme he created a decade ago that became a popular meme format. People do not know it came from him, but he feels a sense of accomplishment every time he sees it used. During 2020, there was a fear of getting fired, doxxed, and ostracized for opposing the social justice movement. I was one of the young men targeted for my defense of monuments in general, including ones to Confederate soldiers in particular. It was lonely, but something happened. In 2025, it is popular not just to be politically incorrect, but also unnecessarily edgy. In fact, it is how you build a platform. It will still get you in trouble in institutional settings to say things offensive to the liberal order, but in certain circles, it takes about as much courage as it did in 2020 to oppose whiteness. I have seen more misguided, positive depictions of Hitler in the past year than I think I have in my entire life before this. What is happening here? I think it partially relates to our lack of a rite of passage and the desire to be listened to. Shocking content takes little work, receives much attention for the moment, and offending the powers that be seems brave. My middle-aged friends are not involved in this and see through it for what it is. But I imagine it is frustrating for them to watch an emerging value system reward people for degraded things when they have put in the hard work of remaining personally virtuous, supporting their family, and fulfilling their social duties. The modern George Baileys. I know them, and they are the George Baileys of our time. Without them, we simply do not have a community. They volunteer to help those in need. They attend their children's activities. They make sure their wife's vehicle is in running condition before their own. They attend church and put money in the collection plate. They pay taxes and contribute to charities. They vote their conscience. They go to bed exhausted and start the whole process over the next day. They wonder sometimes if it will be like this forever, and determine that even if it is, they will still go the distance for everything they love. They see what happened to Charlie Kirk and want to do something to fill his shoes, but simply do not have the bandwidth to study political issues and spend time on college campuses arguing with students when they are planning family day and volunteering to give blood or trimming an elderly widow's hedges the next day. They are the true unsung heroes, but it is hard for them to see it, just like it was hard for George Bailey. The reality is, middle-aged men, your hair may grow thinner, your sprint time may slow down. Your free time may dissipate. Your doctor may tell you to watch the carbs. Your civic leaders may take your volunteering for granted. If you are married, your marriage may even be strained at times, and your kids may not exactly be angels all the time. But you are the unsung heroes of our country, and somewhere deep down, we know it. Frank Capra, an Italian Catholic, and Philip Van Doren Stern, who wrote the short story it was based on, and was of Bavarian Jewish descent, recognized something about the seemingly average Protestant American male, something that without his presence, death spiraled society into Pottersville. The Battle of Bedford Falls is still the most important social battle and always will be. I'm going to reveal something I have not said before. Every week, at least a few times, I wonder whether or not all my podcasting, speaking, book publishing, and documentary film work has been as important as the local battles around me. I struggle to figure out whether I should hang it up and devote more of my time to my church and community. I do what I can already, but could I do more if I had a 9-to-5? These are the questions that go through my mind because I know deep down the difference one man can make on the local level has a ripple effect greater than that man can even see himself. Long after my podcast is forgotten, the echo of my influence will still be in my children and hopefully my church and the region I live in. Middle-class American man, first, I want to thank you. I want to say, not only are you a real man, you are the reason civilization continues to exist in the first place. Second, your significance is planted deeply around you in ways that maybe it would take a Clarence to convince you of, and I am no Clarence. But I do know what David in Psalm 128, 1 through 4 says is true. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruits of your hands, you will be happy and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around their table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Enjoy your reward. Merry Christmas. So I will be honest, there was a few times I may have gotten a little bit emotional writing that, just thinking of not just my own life, but the lives of so many of my close friends, seeing the changes that have happened over the last decade or so, and knowing that there's some really faithful people out there, and they're not people that have the limelight. They don't have platforms on social media. They're not trying to even approach that because they have real responsibilities that take them away from it. And those things are more important, and they should be. And so I just want to give you a salute, give you a tribute, and say thank you, because I have a daughter now, and she's growing up very quickly. And every old person who told me it goes quick was not lying about that. And I think it changes things when you have kids a little bit. You start thinking about the world they're going to inherit. And I have a lot of concerns about that. I worry about it. There's no doubt. I think of the way that people are in general, immaturity, the lack of critical thinking, the selfishness, the entitlement mentality. I could go on and on about negative characteristics that are out there. But it's good to remind ourselves God's in control, His Spirit still works, and there are people that truly are doing their best and they're doing a good job and they are raising their kids up. And if that is your only accomplishment, which I'm sure it's not, but if it is that you raised up children and they're productive members of society, that in and of itself is a wonderful, wonderful thing. If your only achievement is that you kept the marriage together and you did what was necessary to make sure that you had an intact family as a life raft for everyone else around you, even. That is a commendable thing. If the only thing that you end up doing is you contribute to your church and your community in such a way that those organizations keep going, that your local veterans group still helps veterans because you volunteered, that the local soup kitchen is still feeding people because you devoted of your time to be there. And that is the kind of thing that keeps our community actually going. And those are the ways that we can demonstrate the love of Christ in real, tangible, personal ways. You don't know sometimes, even as you're listening to me behind a microphone, behind a camera, there's a place for this, obviously, and it's hopefully to encourage you, but you don't know the lives of the people that are behind that, if that's all you know about them. It's very hard because you only see a glimpse. But when you're out there in the real world, day in and day out, on the job, coworkers know you, they have learned to respect you because they know you're an honest person. They know that you're a stable person. That is worth its weight in so much more gold than as many social media followers as you could possibly have. And I truly believe that. And I think it means something, hopefully, coming from me as someone who does have, even if it's a little small, I suppose, I do have somewhat of a social media following. But I believe every word I just said. I don't think this lasts forever at all, but I do think there is an echo throughout time for the things that you do on the local level, especially. and the depth at which you invest in real people. So I hope that's encouraging for you this Christmas. If you're someone who has felt like, man, I don't know, should I have gone a different direction? Why am I ignored? Why is it that I don't have the time to do the things I really want to do? Do I have any significance? Am I making a difference? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Well, God bless. Have a Merry Christmas. And I will have more content coming after Christmas. But if I don't see you until after Christmas, this has been the Conversations That Matter podcast. Until next time, fear God, stand strong, and love others. Good night.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.